You are listening to Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang, Dwayne.
Hello.
And me, Brian. Because I haven't got much week to record this, and Niall's on lights, so it's just us two. Okay, this week's episode, we're talking about all the usual things. We'll start off with Dragon Ball Super, episode 79. Did you catch the name of it? I've got it here now. I'm into Crunchyroll. I was having trouble getting into Crunchyroll. Universe 9's Basil the Kicker versus Universe 7's Majin Buu.
Yep, all the official match titles.
Yes.
I had trouble with Crunchyroll as well the last few days. I don't know what's up with it.
Well, I know what was up with it just now. I was accidentally signed into a Japanese VPN, and therefore...
Oh, I just mean it's not signing me in.
Okay, therefore I couldn't see anything. Hmm. Okay, so this is exactly what it says on the tin. It's Basil versus Boo. They have a very well animated fight.
Yep.
There's nothing particularly clever about the fight. It's more just saying, oh, this is a lot better than... in terms of animation, than a lot of the fights we've seen in this show so far.
Yeah, I guess what's kind of unique about it is your man focuses entirely on kicks, and instead of like punching out energy balls, he kicks them out and that
like
kind of
football,
thing.
Like a football, yes.
Yeah, so that's a nice change.
It is. He basically like produces a ball of energy appears before him, and then he'll kick the ball of energy at people.
He does set his foot on fire like Sanji as well, though.
Yes, and he also takes steroids.
Yep.
So the main key is, well, key literally is... these guys from this other universe, we can't detect their key.
Yeah, and I mean, like, that might explain why the entire thing of why they couldn't detect the god's key kind of thing.
Yes.
The god's energy levels, because it's basically like they're on another plane of existence, whereas these guys from another universe are from another level of existence.
So you could probably detect them from your sister universe.
Yeah, because they're so like, we got a Frieza, they got a Frieza, that kind of thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
We've got a Beerus, they've got a fat Beerus.
Yeah, there's some correlation there for you to base it off, whereas this one is like giant fucking fox, man. I don't have a clue what to do.
Yeah. Mm. And Goku is totally hyped about that, because he's like, finally, something new. Something I've got to get my head around.
Everyone else is very worried, and fucking Beerus even says, like, it's like, a fucking idiot getting really excited about this kind of thing. But yeah, he's really... He's pumped.
Yeah, and the fun thing about the Universe 9 is their Kai is more aggressive than their God of Destruction.
Like, at one point he kind of gives out, but other times he's like, geez, isn't that going a bit far? It's like, you're the God of Destruction. Yeah, so obviously he's egged on by the Kai in that universe.
So
Universe 9, isn't it?
It is Universe 9. Apparently the Supreme Kai's name is Ru. And the God of Destruction's name is Sidra. I don't think that gets mentioned in this episode, but it has been revealed. In fact, the names of all the Gods of Destruction and which universes they belong to has been revealed.
Oh, brilliant. I'm going to get that flowchart going then.
Yes. So you've got Universe 1, Iwen, or Ivan, depending on how they're going to anglicize it. Mm. He's the furball guy. He's the big fairy guy. Medium-sized guy who's just got a big furry head.
Yeah, the pointy ears.
Yeah. Universe 2 is Helles, the Cleopatra.
Ah, okay.
Universe 3 is Mosco, who's the giant green robot. Quitella is Universe 4's God of Destruction, that's the mouse.
Okay.
Universe 5, this is one we didn't spot last week, Arrak, who is the guy who looks like a punk rock E.T.,
oh, shit, I didn't spot him this week as well. There's a lot going on.
I think he's quite in the background most of the time.
Okay.
I was like, is that E.T. or is that like one of those, what are they called, the Doga statues? But I haven't seen the full design of him. He's even got like the finger pointing out. So I was really? Like, oh, yeah, there's definitely some E.T. in that design.
Okay, you might be fucking right about the whole Captain Picard thing as well. If he's just going to straight up have other sci-fi things.
Well, yes, some of the characters are designed by Toriyama. Some of them are designed by, I can't remember the guy's name, the guy's doing the Dragon Ball Super comic.
Okay.
And some of them are designed by both. I assume the ones designed by Toriyama are going to last longer in the tournament than the other ones.
Yeah, I just need someone to get in the loser dimensions.
Yeah, obviously, now 6 and 7 is Champa and Beerus. 8 is Liqueur, who is the fox man.
Oh, the three-tailed fox. Dude. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sidra at Universe 9. Of course, we already know the Supreme Kai of Universe 10, Gawasu. And the elephant is called Ramush. Vamood is the clown from Universe 11. And Jin is the fishman from Universe 12.
Okay.
So, as you can tell, they've all got named. They're all named after alcoholic drinks still.
Or well, they got to keep in theme.
Anagram thereof in the case of Quitella and Iwen. Yeah, and also the problem is that now you've got ones who've actually got the same names as characters out of Detective Conan, which...
Oh, really? That's a theme in Conan as well, is it?
Yeah, the black organisation, all their code names are alcoholic drinks.
Okay.
Yeah, so Boo wins. Basil is, like, totally thwarted because Boo just pulls himself back together again every time. Like,
Yeah. And he pumps it up and your man starts... Basil takes drugs halfway through the fight. And I like the setup for this because it actually, like, tells you a lot about the next tournament, which besides, you know, good animation is nice. It's kind of like, hey, we kicked him out of the ring. That means we win. It's like, no, not until fucking the God of All is fucking, you know, happy do we end this shit. Or unless you fucking can't move anymore. Yeah,
but they do reassure...
That also includes if you're dead. But yeah.
Yeah. They do. Wiss's dad does reassure everyone that there will be rules by the time we get to the actual tournament.
Yeah, this is us establishing the rules.
Yes.
So it's kind of like anything fucking goes, which I was kind of thinking, like, how is Universe 6's Frieza going to get back into the thing? Because his entire thing was cheating.
Yes.
And it's like, well, they might be, the God of All might be like, oh, you poison people. That's fun. You know,
whatever
he considers cool it goes for, yeah.
But at the same time, I suspect Roshi will be perfectly happy to do untoward things in a fight, as he's been known to in the past.
Well, I don't know how else he's going to fucking last up in this thing. That's the thing I'm really looking forward to, seeing how all the old guys are going to kind of remain relevant, I suppose.
Well, he fared fairly well against Frieza's army.
Yeah, but still.
He did his instant roiding. Yeah. Maneuver. We also get the names of the other foxes. Lavender.
I thought we only got Lavender's name.
Oh, well, yeah. But apparently elsewhere we know the other guys.
Okay.
Yeah. Bagama.
Okay, what's the theme there? Because I couldn't get Lavender and...
I think they're like things which smell.
Okay, because I was thinking that's a herb and that's like a flower.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm not really sure what the theme is. That makes sense. Okay.
Yeah, so we get Lavender next, who's the brown fox man who looks...
Tails, yeah.
Yeah.
The guy with the dungaree.
Well, no, surely Tails is the... is
yeah,
Liqueur
the
from Universe 8.
Tails, yeah. He's got just the... not dungarees, oh, crap, what do you call those straps to keep your pants up?
Braces.
he's wearing braces on his pants, that's it.
Yes, and he's got, like, a hunchback.
And he appears to be like, okay, can I totally kill him? And they're like, yeah, go for it. And Gohan's up next.
Yes. It's not Winner Stays On in this one.
No. It's just to see what the different universes can do, I guess.
Yeah.
Establish what will be most fun.
Yeah, I did go back and rewatch last week's episode. It is only Universe 7 who are told about the universes being destroyed when you lose in the actual tournament.
Okay, I was wondering that, because I'm wondering what the stakes are for the other guys. I guess they win the Dragon Balls, which is pretty good.
Yes.
That's kind of worrying that nobody else knows Goku is the Harbinger of Destruction.
The other guys, it was just Universe 9, were worried that if they upset Kaio, he would wipe them out rather than the universe.
Yeah, that's true. I guess they're just scared of the God of All kind of thing. But I think the only other guy we see is that big hooded dude.
Yeah, who appears to be the bearded guy who's in the Starfleet uniform in the opening credits.
Okay. Right. And he just cancels out. I think it was one of Boo's.
No, when Boo reflects Basil's kick.
That's it.
Away from him.
Yeah, he just wipes out the energy ball or whatever you want to call it.
Yes. Mr. Satan gets knocked out at one point as well. But
I imagine Boo has to do it for his dad. It's not. I honestly actually like the relationship.
Oh, I do as well. Yes, but it is kind of like it. I think definitely part of this is like, oh, Bulma's not here, and what's worse, instead of Bulma, we've got Mr. Satan.
It's not really. I was going to say it's not an improvement. It's not even a fucking equivalent of Bulma and keeping shit together. Oh dear.
Yeah. So I guess we get to see how well Gohan does next week. But yeah, it's highly enjoyable. And looking forward to see where it goes, and hopefully we'll get some more weirdos showing up and get their names, and I mean, that's part of the fun of it, is to see all this. And obviously there's going to be like tiny little mini stories of Goku and Hit and things like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Righty-ho, on to the shorts. Oh, blimey, I do believe I forgot to watch Ninja Girl and Samurai Master episode 20.
That was the something to do with his sister. I've forgotten the title.
Yeah, I did forget to watch it. We can leave it till next week if you like.
We can do two in, after each other.
Yes,
because
they're only going 3 minutes. Yeah. It was a tight fit to fit everything in this week, and the thing which was the shortest got lost.
I took the chop.
And I wish I'd chop something else, to be honest, but we'll get to that. Bono Bono, episode 32. What was this episode called?
Something to do with fun. Things aren't fun.
Has it really been fun lately?
That's it.
Yes. In which Fenny is wondering if it's really been fun lately.
The first mostly Fenny episode?
I think so, yeah. Oh, no, yeah. It was Fenny goes, ah.
Oh, yeah, that did have a good bit of her. Yeah, yeah.
Yes. Him, I think. Again, this was the problem.
Yeah, it's still
you're you're gendering Fenny because he's pink.
I thought it was voiced by a woman.
And also voiced by a woman.
I guess that's what I'm thinking, yeah.
You had a similar problem with Chipmunk.
That's true as well, yeah.
And Chipmunk, again, gets the best bit of this episode.
Well, Chipmunk has his shit together, you know?
Yes. Bleakly explains that, hey, the world isn't fun. But you know what is fun? A chipmunk wandering down a path waving at you.
Yeah. It did make the path look more fun. You got to give him that. He knows what he's talking about.
And that must have been so much that I can't remember how they got to the worm on stilts bit.
So, Fenny was, like, they walk up to, like, initially Fenny goes to Bono. It's like, hey, has things been not as fun lately? And he's like, I don't know. And he asks his dad. And she's like, you can't just ask your dad if you've been having fun lately. So that they're kind of like, I guess this hasn't been as fun lately. And they bond over that. And then they go like, wait a minute, that's nothing to bond over.
They go and annoy Raccoon.
Well, Raccoon's like been punched and given out to by his father. And it's like, hey, Raccoon, are things fun lately? And he's like, no, you fucking idiots. I just got punched.
But how do they get to thinking that a worm's walking around on stilts?
Right, here's how they get to that, right? So Fenny has the theory that like, kind of like a butterfly effect, that maybe a volcano went off and caused it to rain someplace, and then the rainwater did such and such and such and such, and eventually led to a miasma of people not having as much fun as they used to have. And Raccoon's like, that's not a thing that fucking happens. She's like, okay, maybe it's something simple, like a worm was rolling around and it caught two twigs,
tangled
in the twigs, and it could walk around on stilts. And then they get obsessed with finding this stilts worm.
And Raccoon gets annoyed because like, you just made that up. How can you find them? And then they hear somebody walking around on stilts. And they go, it's the worm. But no, it is Chipmunk wandering around on stilts, who seems to be having a lot of fun.
Yeah, he's having a lot of fun with those stilts. and he explains that the world is inherently not fun, except for the fun that you bring to it. Which I guess is a negative / positive way of looking at it.
Fenny describes that it's an ongoing state of not having fun that they're experiencing. Chipmunk's like, you know when you're having fun, but you probably don't know when you're not having fun.
Yeah.
The reason is that the world is first and foremost not fun. And then he points over to an empty path. He goes, does it look fun over there? And they're like, no, no. And then he goes, proved it. But what if I do this? And he wanders down the path
waving and smiling at them. And they're like, yeah, that looks pretty fun.
Yeah.
And Fenny can't seem to, still doesn't kind of come to her. So she buggers off home, and then she's kind of happy when she goes home. And basically they all go and hang out at their homes or with their dads or whatever.
Yes, it basically seems to cheer up once the dad shows up.
Yeah, and I think that the philosophical thing that Bono's trying to do this week is that it's not so much that happiness is like a goal that you're trying to achieve, because, you know, in life you have ups and downs and everything, but it's like this, find the places and the things that make you happy.
Yes. Right? You can't just expect fun to come along for you.
Yeah, yeah,
I think
yeah.
it's what it's kind of what you got. You've got to kind of make your own fun.
Mm.
And hey, if your fun is searching for a worm walking around on stilts, then so be it. That was a great bit of animation.
Yeah.
The way they sort of animated the worm getting tangled up and then wandering around on the stilts.
As a natural progression of
yes.
events.
Okay, on to Shonen Ishibe, Go Go Gomachan, episode 31. What was this episode called?
I think it's just Ishibe's birthday or something.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
Boom, 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 boom. Yeah, you're bang on the money. Ishibe's birthday is what it was called.
Well, I set it up the last week, so.
And hey, we didn't have to wait long for those twins to show up again. And everybody else.
Yeah, there's a lot going on in this one. They even managed to include Sugao from last week, continuing on that story.
Yeah. There's a lot of gags in this one.
Mm.
My favourite is those twins dressed up as Ishibe and Goma, and then Goma accidentally gives away the magic trick when Ishibe chases after him behind the stage. And then
it's like, oh, wow, twins. Awesome. So, Grandpa, you're going to do a magic trick. And he's like, twins, get the fuck out of here.
It's like, what was the magic trick going to be that involved
He was going to drown one and make it look like he made him teleport to a different place.
But they were dressed in different costumes.
And change costume.
Okay, right.
The costume was also an extra bit of magic. Yeah.
There was like a... like a river of cream.
No, they were the entire party was held on a giant cake.
No, that was it. Yes,
and I was just thinking that's gross because the teacher starts swimming and eating through the cake
and racing Goma.
And yeah, obviously, yeah, racing the seal.
Yeah, the big brother of the bully brings Ishibe a present of raw fish. He's like, oh, you don't like raw fish? You better give him to Goma.
Yep, there's a lottery for the president's chair, which everyone assumes is like, oh, that he's deciding his successor by lottery?
Yes. All right. That was good, because one of the guys thinks, oh, when I'm in charge, I've got to make everyone my minions.
Yeah, and he has a very... because he's already an ugly dude, but they draw his face like extra ugly because of his plotting, I suppose, yeah.
Yes, and then he thinks he's won... but it turned out he'd got, was it ticket 6? But it was actually ticket 9.
Ticket 9 that had won.
Yes, they'd forgotten to draw a line underneath.
Like, is that a standard lottery thing? Because I feel like that was the same joke in Father Ted. It was different that he was holding his number 11 one upside down.
That was, still, yes.
Yeah, holding your ticket upside down.
It's
in
a good joke.
I mean.
It's a good joke to see somebody go, ha ha, I won, and then gloat to everybody else and then have to step down.
To see someone get their comeuppance in that regard, yeah.
Was Pepepe playing a piano?
Yeah, yeah. It was reminding me of something off Peanuts or something.
Yes. but the other thing is, Sugao wants to send another present to Ishibe, and there's a guy from Japan wanders in. We also learn the name of this country as well.
Oh, that's right.
Write down. It's the Republic of something or other. Yes.
So I mean, like, maybe there's a pun in there. But the flag is like a frog wearing a crown, waving, and like three flies flying around on the flag.
And the teacher wants him to make key rings.
So he can sell them, and obviously he's dragged into the woods by the Yeti.
Yes.
Yeah.
So they meet this Japanese tourist, and basically Sugao gives him a present to give to Ishibe, which is a hug. And obviously the parents are weirded out by this man wandering up to their child and hugging him. They're like,
what the fuck?
But instantly, Ishibe recognizes Sugao's hug by proxy.
Mm. And I think, it was just before that, I think Goma gave him a ladybird as a present.
That was it, yes.
Which, you know, they just let off in one of those nice little animation bits. But I think the Sugao present was clearly the one he appreciated the most.
Yes. Again, lots of good gags, lots of good animation.
Yep.
I think this may be the most consistently well-animated show we watch.
Yeah, I think the only major flaw of it is sometimes it's not as consistent with coming out.
Yeah.
But yeah, like you said, maybe it's the consistency of the animation that's actually slowing it down a little.
I suspect it's not. I suspect it just gets preempted for other things.
They move the teams around. Sure.
Yeah. or something more important has to air on in that slot on that day.
Okay.
Because it occasionally happens to the Sunday morning shows.
Hmm.
It's like if there's some sports on, there'll suddenly be no One Piece. Yeah, because it went away for the Olympics a lot, didn't it?
Oh, that's right. Did. Yeah, it was basically gone the whole freaking summer, I think. Hmm.
Righty-ho. That's all our shorts. I'll try and remember to watch Ninja Girl and Samurai Master next week. It's like, I could have watched it straight away. I was like, oh, no, I'll leave it till later so I'll remember it. And then...
Like, I watched all the shorts, like, earlier last week, so I had to rewatch them all before I started podcasting.
I always have to rewatch Ninja Girl and Samurai Master because it's, even though it's only 3 minutes long, it is usually so dense with history.
Yeah, I mean, just rewatch them, I barely had to pay attention to pick up on the bits of it.
Heybot didn't get an episode title on Crunchyroll this week, but it was one of the best episodes they've done so far. In a really ludicrous way, they somehow accidentally turned the world into a 1980s video game world.
All right.
And basically there's loads of jokes about 1980s video games, 1980s video game culture, what it was like. There's blowing on the cartridges jokes. There's jokes about things in rumors in magazines that turn out not to be true. Loads and loads of references that I'm sure kids won't get.
Yeah, again, this show, I'm not sure who it's for.
No, but they do the blowing on cartridges thing in Kamen Rider X8 as well. One of the guys, when he's plugging in his transforming device, he blows on it before he plugs it in.
Like, that's part of the transformation.
Yes, because this is video game themed, you see.
So. Okay.
It all makes sense. Anyway, this was a really good episode of Heybot.
I saw you put up the Pokemon parody.
Yes, yeah. Mm. Yeah, it was top to bottom full of good gags, and it didn't really go off the rails as it is wont to do.
Hmm.
It was like any diversion it was going to was within the theme of the entire episode.
Okay.
Which is kind of how it worked last week with the Fist of the North Star. That was fairly coherent as well.
Mm.
Righty-ho. On to... Let's start with Miss Kobayashi's Dragon Maid Episode 6, Home Visit and Homes Not Visited. This week they forgot to put any jokes in.
I like bits of it. I'm getting more weirded out by those kids. By the one kid, I guess.
Yes.
And
now you've got another kid to get weirded out about as well.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't learn enough about him. It kind of seemed to be more so... crap, what's the freaking Quetzalcoatl's nickname again?
Lotl? I think it's Lukoa.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Anyway, so it's kind of three main segments. Mm. One is they go round the little girl's house because they say she's got a maid who wants to speak to Toru. At the end, it turns out to be a big sister who's also a maid fanatic.
Yeah, super into maids. Georgie. Which is why she gets on with Kobayashi.
And then there's some weird stuff with her being totally in love with Kanda.
Yeah, see, they're kind of moving it out of the kid having, like, a crush on someone, which is fine. That's, like, a little kid thing. And it making it, like, you're veering into sexual here. That's kind of weird.
Yep. Then we get stuff about Lakoa. Quetzalcoatl has been... Well, she's accidentally been summoned by this son of a family of sorcerers. Because she detected somebody summoning something and thought, oh, I better go and check it in case they're accidentally summoning a demon. And now this kid thinks that he summoned a succubus.
Yeah, and she has the lads come over to his house to explain that she's not a succubus, she's a dragon, kind of.
And just it convinces him even more that she is a succubus.
Well, to be fair, the one who knows the most about it is she's saying, like, well, you're not really a dragon, you're kind of a fallen goddess.
Yeah.
It's kind of like...
That sounds like a demon to me, thanks to the kid. And this was the one bit where I laughed at the end when Kobayashi's like, something's weirding me out about that kid's family, because as we were leaving, I saw a photo of his dad, and it appears to be my boss.
Dum, dum, dum. Yeah.
Or it's the owner of the company she works for rather than boss.
So
that was the one bit which made me laugh and also made me think, oh, this episode kind of felt like, oh, we've run out of all the ideas I had.
So it's setting up some other stuff?
Originally in the comic. Or maybe the comic's proved more successful than I thought it was going to be. I better come up with some new stuff. And then the third part is just really depressing tale of how Fafner lives his life.
Well, I think it's trying to equate the obsessive compulsive thing of a dragon to being an otaku.
Yeah, I think you might be right. I didn't pick that up when I watched. This was like the very last thing I watched. And it was
because later on he makes the comparison to hoarding gold.
Yes.
And it's just him like fucking logging in hours in WoW or whatever the fuck he's playing. Yes.
He's playing video games 23 hours a day. Yeah, I think you might be a point. In fact, now you've pointed that out, I may like it more than I did. But again, okay. There's not many jokes in this episode.
Yeah. I feel like I thought the last episode did a very good job of doing the nice kind of small human moments among the jokes, whereas this one had like a lot of the kind of human moments and less heavy on the jokes.
Yeah.
It wasn't as good a balance.
I mean, it's still really well animated.
Oh, yeah.
It's just this was the first time I felt like, could you put this effort into something a bit better than this?
Yeah, it's still probably one of the best animated things we're watching right now.
Yeah.
But yeah, not the best episode. I still enjoyed it, but maybe it's the small segment parts of it that doesn't allow me to get sick of any particular part. But
that's
it works
true.
Well.
You get the other little segments, which are just like, here's a joke.
Yeah, and it breaks it up a little. So.
But again, I can't remember what any of those were, and some of those weren't jokes.
Yeah.
Never mind. Talking of things which did have jokes, though, the next two things. Timeboken 24, episode 20. The Shinsengumi was actually a blank group. This, I think, was the best episode since the Pythagoras one for me.
Okay. That's high praise.
Because it looked good.
That's true, actually.
Last was okay. Last week's was okay, but this one did really look good in places.
Mm. So, like, what's the blank in this case?
It could be
we're
two
actually
things.
Shy?
Yeah.
A boy band group?
Or a mass wrestling group.
Yeah,
like
again,
they
cause a time paradox and cause the history to change, I guess.
Yes.
In some regard.
So in this world, yes, in order to make, sort of keep samurai in line, whoever founded the Shinsengumi, this time founded it full of pretty boys.
Because he figured they'll get on best with the populace because they're so pretty.
In a way, but they've all been, like, volunteered by relatives, which apparently...
By all their female relatives, I know, as well. My mom got me in, my aunt got me in, my sister pushed me into it.
Yes,
that kind of way.
They do say that, well, that sounds a lot like idols. So assuming that's what happens to boy band idols, and maybe women as well, is that they all get pushed into... People, like, see a audition thing, and they, oh, will you be good at that?
Yeah, and they're not too keen on it, obviously.
No, they are incredibly shy.
Mm.
And, and so they basically, our heroes and the villains barely have any effect on this story.
Yeah,
in fact, at one point,
much.
The mecha battle is happening off-screen.
I fucking love that.
Oh, I did
it was
as
just
well,
like
yes.
You're seeing the destruction, one of the guys is crushed by debris as they're having their emotional character moment.
Yes. Because at the start, one of them gets trapped by the fountains and the other two leave him behind. And then at the end, and one of the ones who left him behind gets crushed by a building.
Oh, dear.
I really enjoyed this. And I'm trying to think what else was of note happened. It wasn't the same fantasy sequence this time, was it? Was it like tennis? Her dating a soccer player, wasn't it? That was her fantasy.
I think she was like a goalie.
Yeah.
And she saves the ball, which is somehow good.
There's the thing where they all just assume Tsubayaki would be into idols.
Yeah, because he's made the idol mecha as well.
Yeah, and they won't help him out. They go, oh, we just assumed this was your thing.
I think they more so lose because of their infighting amongst themselves.
Yeah, and Suzuki is worried about his face getting damaged and all his female fans will be upset. Like, what female fans? Nobody likes you. And again, Tsubayaki is going on about all the high school girls who are watching the show. This time with specific numbers. So they got even more demographics in.
Mm.
I'm sure the robot says something terrible. Oh, it's like, oh, you might die this time, Tokyo. Tokyo, when they're going into the past. This might be the most dangerous place we've been to.
Yeah, they don't do much in the present of this. They kind of jump straight into
yeah,
the mission, I guess.
And Callan's cosplay is utterly ridiculous.
Yeah, because there was an obvious thing to cosplay about.
Yes.
Yeah, this one is not it.
And they make a police mecha.
Oh, yeah, that one comes back.
Yes.
And the fangirl gets arrested for turning into a stalker robot.
Yes.
Which is, I was like, yeah, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, I had a good time watching this at 7 o'clock this morning. And then we had Classicaloid, the other comedy of the week. Love and You Shall Die.
I thought this one was pretty good.
Yeah, I enjoyed this one a lot as well. So in this, basically everyone gets trapped in the mansion by Tchaikovsky's music.
Well, initially, like, Tchaikovsky and, was it Baranowski, or?
Yes.
They're both, like, basically, like, they can't stop arguing, even though your man's trying to force the band back together.
On TV, no less.
Like, he's figuring out, if I put them into the mansion, he has a weird idea of the mansion, that if I force them into the mansion, then they'll have to get on, because everyone in the mansion gets on. I was like, yeah, but they don't really.
Hey, it works.
It does work, but not in the way he intends. You can see at the end of the episode, he's like, I didn't want this. But Tchaikovsky's, she summons, I don't know what way you call it.
It's like
Swan
basically
Lake.
Becomes the plot of Swan Lake, sort of.
Yeah, yeah. Where Hachi is playing the evil sorcerer, who they all refuse to go. It's like, yeah, but you're Hachi, right?
Yes, he seems to be anything to do with curses. Seems to have, he is involved. And they all see Chopin talking to Hachi this time.
Yeah, the other thing is as well, I think this is probably, despite the last time where he had, you know, the red eyes and everything, I think this is Hachi at its most terrifying, because you have loads of multicolored ones.
Yes.
Like grabbing people, like fucking pterodactyls or something. That's pretty good.
Yeah, so if you fall in love, you'll be taken away by the birds.
Initially, I figured, because Mozart was there with three fangirls, I figured, oh, did they add in extra girls so that we could pair more people off? I was like, no, him and the three girls become a couple. And
almost,
all get taken
almost
away.
Instantly. They've had the curse explained, and then they're almost instantly whisked away.
Yeah, I think afterwards it says, okay, the chances of falling in love are increased by 70%. Or something like that. Yeah,
and Kanai's costumes keep on changing to make her more appealing.
Yeah, and they're really weirded out where she shows up with, like, fresh soup for everyone. Yes. Dressed as, like, a cute cat girl and
cat
weird
girl
things.
Maid.
That's it, a cat girl maid.
And Lissy's like, don't look at her, look at me. And she strips off into a Playboy bunny outfit. Which only works on Sosuke, because she thinks they're all interested in Kanai, but no, they're just all interested in the food.
Yeah, yeah. They've fallen for the food in this case.
Whereas Sosuke has fallen for List, and they've paired them. And then she appreciates him paying attention to her instead of the food. Mm. And then they both get whisked away.
Yeah, like very quickly people just like get taken out, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, then we get the great bit with Chopin and Schubert and...
That's fucking amazing. So, yeah, they seem to be pairing off Schubert with Baranowska, and they keep...
No, Chopin, because Chopin rushes out.
Sorry, Chopin, not Schubert.
Tchaikovsky sends Baranowska off to get him.
Yeah, and they... What is the first one, the school sports day with the three-legged race?
Yes, it is, yeah.
they're going to Hachi School, where you're chased by giant fucking shoebills.
And then it's the dog in the puppy in the rain.
Yeah, yeah. Which changes... A little when a punk version of Schubert shows up. Yes.
And then it's Schubert and Chopin riding off into the distance instead of Baranowska.
Yeah, yeah. No predicting that, but all right.
I'm still not sure what Tchaikovsky... Because Tchaikovsky, he's like pretending that she doesn't know what's happened to her music, but then you keep on getting these sly things that she knows what's happening.
Yeah, because I think she's the only one who knows the plot of the story.
That's true.
And as to why she's, unbeknownst to herself, kind of done this. Because she wants to get back. She wants to get the band back together.
Yeah. I'm not even sure she did when she first started doing this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's the initial implication, and then it kind of changes.
Yes. that's how it ends up, with the pair of them on a
A rope bridge?
A rope bridge. So Sosuke goes back inside because everyone of these are just outside. It turns, they're like, oh, and then they use pads to explain there's an alternative ending to Swan Lake.
Which That's is a happy ending.
Of
yeah.
A happy ending.
I do like the fact that they were all just outside. It's like, oh, once you leave the mansion, you're fine.
Yes. Well, we know by now that it's all illusion. Really.
Yeah, yeah.
The music is, so. I think it was like, basically, I think the Schubert one is the one which pretty much a we're seeing the first episode with them dancing, but
like the one thing that makes me think that isn't the case is like the fact that they seem to spend a week living as fish.
That is true, yes.
Other than that, it seems to be mass hypnosis.
Or maybe that's the, maybe that's them getting more powerful. I don't know. Yeah, so Sosuke thinks, oh, this is my chance with Baron Elsker. I'll go back in.
Yeah, yeah. Once he hears the rope bridge thing, he's like initially scared, and then he's like, oh, you know, the rope bridge phenomena. And he's like, oh, okay, then runs out onto the bridge.
And it was a bit earlier with Beethoven hiding in the kitchen cupboard.
Yeah, because he's like, he's obviously a very passionate guy, so he's trying not to let these passions go out of control. And I thought the way they were setting it up, because it ends up just being Sosuke and kind of on the rope bridge, they were going to pair them off. But brilliantly, they let fucking Sosuke die, essentially. and Baranowska and obviously
Tchaikovsky go off in a like a swan pedalo.
Yeah.
And Beethoven saves Kanai from falling off the rope bridge.
This is the second suggestion that they have a thing. Oh dear, maybe that's the most popular ship, I don't know.
I don't know, but I think it's just everyone is like, the power seems to also heighten that.
Yeah. So the fact that it was a suggestion even before... Yeah,
it was like the merest sign of concern or interest is pounced on by the power.
By the hatchies, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, this was good fun. I like how it's all set, it's all another one where they're all in one place, basically. It's...
Yeah,
an animated bottle episode, which is a thing which does not need to happen.
Ah, but when it's done well, like
it is. Yeah, I mean, it's, as a writing exercise, it's quite clever.
Yeah. When you compare the characters against each other pretty well. And I did like the kind of end result is that the what's a classy or something? Is the
I can
event?
Never remember what they're called because I always want to call them Klasky Kuspo, the people who made Rugrats.
Okay. But yeah, the band is back together, but this time they keep breaking down in the middle of it and arguing with each other, yes. Which the fans love.
Yes.
But they got that niche covered now.
Well, yeah, it was proven back when Kanai was trying to be an idol.
But that was that's a viable thing to do. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, Classicaloid. I mean, how many episodes we got left? I think we got 6.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think there's only...
I think it was 25, so yeah, 20 to 25, that's 6, yeah. Good.
Mm.
And finally, not finally, we've got Tiger Mask Double to talk about. Penultimately, let me find what this was called. This did get a title, I know that.
Is it just called the name of the event?
It's not on Crunchyroll, though.
Oh.
The title isn't. Episode 17 doesn't have a title either.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Only episode 18 has of the last 3. Anyway, so it's Hell in the Hole, basically.
Yeah.
Plus, Naoto goes on a crappy date again.
It's weird that they keep contrasting his crappy date with Hell in the Hole.
But it's fun, because Kevin's always complaining that he wants to eat some food.
And it cuts back to him going like, tasty food.
Yes. I've missed my mouth.
Yes. I'm glad we have so much of Kevin in this episode. He's fast becoming my favorite guy.
And also, after us dissing Odin last week, we get some character development with Odin, and you actually have care for him. But
yeah, which I assume is going to make his fall all the worse.
Oh, yeah, he's probably getting killed by Devilman. By Red Death Mask.
Yeah.
And also, more importantly, introduced this episode is the Third, who appears to be... Tiger the Great, or a new Tiger the Great?
He appears to be like a color change of Tiger Great, because he has the, you know, the white...
No, Tiger the Great was the white tiger who was the leader of Tiger's Den in the original Tiger Mask.
Oh, well, yeah, I know the guy you're talking about, but I can't think of his fucking name now.
He's just called the third in this.
Because I guess they already have two Tiger masks, so he's the third one.
Yeah, or he's going to be called Tiger the Great the Third. He's the third Tiger the Great.
It works both ways. But he has a green tongue for some reason. I guess that's just the color inversion.
So apparently this is what we known as underground wrestling, where people can get killed and the rich
where
bet on it.
Where millionaires pay to gamble on it, essentially.
And so taking part in this, you've got Billy the Kidman, Red Death Mask, Black Python, Odin, Kevin Anderson.
Kevin. I love that screamer comes up and it's just like, oh, it's Kevin, watch out.
Naoto Azuma, two guys who apparently betrayed Tiger's Den, and another guy I can't remember who has apparently, I think, was in it before, and I just forgot who he was. He's the guy with the Hulk Hogan mustache.
Oh, he was the guy who kind of greeted them at the top of the mountain, wasn't it?
I think he might be right, yeah.
Yeah. He's beef with, not Tiger the Derek, with, oh crap, what's
Takuma.
His name? Takuma, yeah.
Also, apparently, Kentaro cannot recognize his own niece wearing a mask that she showed him. the day that Spring Tiger debuted.
Yeah, are you seeing this shit? Freaking Spring Tiger? Yeah, she's using some old school wrestling moves.
Great.
I like his thing. It was like, well, I promised your mother I'd never let you wrestle, as you well know. And she's like, yeah.
Now, have they mentioned in the show that Kentaro was the original Yellow Devil?
He specified it very early on. I think it was when they showed how he came to train. What's his name? He's like, I was the original Yellow Devil. Like when he recruits him to be Tiger Mask, essentially.
I was wondering whether this current the guy who was Yellow Devil before Billy the Kidman.
Yeah, the guy who crippled Takuma's father.
And who is probably the third now, is some relation to Haruna and Kentaro.
Okay. Hadn't considered that, yeah.
I wonder. Or maybe Kentaro is just pretending to limp. Basically, in this, if you beat somebody, then a drone will come along and give you a wrestling weapon.
See, when it said weapons, I was like, is this like a friggin' battle royale type situation? It's like, ooh, you got a fold-out chair. I was like, that's not a great weapon. But
well, that was a great weapon compared to the two weapons we'd seen before that, where Kevin Anderson got a tag rope and Odin got a thing which lets you make a pretend fireball.
Yeah, which are just like, they don't use tag ropes anymore. It's just, you know, slap in, slap out. And the fireball thing is like, that's just for like doing a show thing. So it's all old school stuff as well.
Whereas Red Death Mask has got
a chair and a table.
And a table, yes.
He just needs a ladder and he's sorted.
And there's the suggestion that this is being fixed.
Yeah.
That they're deliberately good. Because Miss X is like, oh, Red Death Mask's got to get out of this.
Yeah, she really wants Takuma to win as well, so it seems to be like the kind of odds are stacked against him. And then there's that millionaire who's like, I'm gonna bet against the young guys because they suck, and he's the only millionaire who's been kind of given any stuff. So
so apparently it's like once they've got to the top of the mountain, then there's somebody they've got to beat to get out as well.
And there's like whatever, like no rules and shit, so you can cool. team up.
Yeah, you can team up. So Billy the Kidman and Odin have teamed up, and I like that they both were like, don't betray me. Same goes for you.
You don't betray me, and I won't betray you, okay, buddy? Yeah.
Whereas Takuma and Kevin are like, yeah, we're the buddies.
They don't even need to say it. They're just like, they both start wailing on it, dude. They both kick the crap out of, what is it, Black Python, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think this is a really good job at making me like Takuma more and Kevin.
Yeah.
It's like I care for them a lot more, particularly as it's contrasted with the date that Naoto is going on.
His life is so pure and innocent and boring in comparison.
I know, but then he sets up another date that is going to be a terrible date.
Yeah, it's like, hey, I'll see you at the Tiger Mask match. And he's like, yeah, cool. Oh, no, I'm Tiger Mask. It's like, God damn it, dude. I mean, like, obviously, you can't say I don't like Tiger Mask. Actually, it's like I figure something out.
I'm assuming the bit where she wipes the food off his face is going to be duplicated by some point where she's wiping blood off Tiger Mask's face, and she's like,
"Oh, and kind of that makes her realize or something."
The penny would drop there or something.
Hmm.
It seemed a very specific thing to include.
I assumed it was focused on because it's like romantic and shit, but yeah, you could be right.
It was just the way it was shot.
Yeah,
made me think, oh, they're going to duplicate that scene at some point in the future.
Mm.
That, because it was like straight onto his face and her hand coming up from the bottom of the screen to wipe it off.
So yeah, to recreate that angle and everything. Yeah. That makes sense.
But yeah, loving this show. I have to say, it keeps on itching its way up the ranks of things I look forward to most each week.
Yeah, it's never spectacular or anything, but it is a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think the storytelling's pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, this episode did look a lot better than some of the other fights.
Yeah. There's still a few shots where Kevin and Takuma look a bit clunky. And the fact, of course, they're just wandering around in their black pants makes it look like they're post-apocalyptic in their underwear.
Yep, just hanging out in a mountain.
Yeah. But are you aware of Vanguard 1?
Nope.
Matt Hardy's drone in TNA.
It has a name?
It has a name. It talks or sends messages and things. It's a character. It's a character in the wrestling show.
Okay, that's awesome.
And Matt Hardy keeps on, every so often they've been doing these like outdoor crazy wrestling things. So I'm assuming that if it was just an outdoor crazy wrestling thing without drones, you could put that to DDT, because DDT do that quite a bit.
Yeah, sure.
But the fact there's drones in this makes me think, oh, maybe this is a TNA reference.
Yeah, that does make sense. I mean, like, they're kind of just amalgamating all of the US wrestling.
Yes.
Into the Monopoly, yeah.
But it's pretty funny when you see those drones bringing a chair and a table. Okay, final show for real this time.
Yep.
ACA, 13 Territory Inspection Department, Episode 6, where Pride and Train Tracks lead. Boy, oh boy, oh boy. A lot of stuff kind of happened.
I think Niall put it well where he said on Twitter, it was like, and now to completely dash all our previous theories and set up a whole new bunch. Of over-analysis.
To be fair, and the characters are in that situation.
Oh, yeah. We're in the same situation as them, sure. We forgot to say that last week, that they suggested that your man and his sister's parents died in a train crash.
Oh, yes, yeah.
But obviously that's fully talked about in this one, so, yeah.
Yeah, so Gene lays it all on the out with Grossula.
Mm-hmm.
Saying, I hear you think that I'm part of a coup, and I've heard that people think you're part of a coup. But
I don't believe that because you sorted out the rail network and there hasn't been any accidents in it since. And I think you actually believe in ACA in the same way you made me believe in ACA as an organization.
And then as he's wandering off, Grosh is like, oh, you're naive.
Yeah, which initially you're like, oh, maybe he is okay. It's like, oh, no, he might still be. Does stuff.
So Moe gets annoyed that he's not bringing her back any information, but that's okay because she's got a whole bunch of other people getting information for her.
Yeah, and obviously Gene doesn't realize that, but he does want to impress her. Not just, I'm guessing, as his boss, but because she's hot.
Yeah. So there's a New Year's party.
The guy's
least convincing top hat appears.
Well, I mean, like it accentuates the not very convincing mustache.
I know.
You got to give it that. Like,
yeah, this wasn't one of the better looking ACA episodes. but that hat is the problem of hats sometimes in anime, is they don't look like a hat. They look like somebody wandering around with a cardboard cutout in the shape of a hat.
Well, yeah, it's just a very long black square, but they could have probably made it a little shorter and looked like it was a believable hat that a human would wear. But yeah.
I'm assuming the important part of that was meeting the guys who give Gene the catalogs.
Yes, the businessmen, and then talking about the fact that their business has improved.
Yeah.
So, it potentially says that they're, like, really happy to see Gene. It's like, dude, I fucking sold, like, 50 vending machines thanks to you. So you can see why they would pay him in cigarettes, this yes. really rare fucking thing.
But I also would, whether that is actually what's happening.
Yes.
And whether whether they're using Gene as a unknowing patsy.
Is it possible he's given information without them even fucking knowing? Like here's the fucking conspiracy theory as fuck. The catalogs he's passing out are actually fucking are for the coup. Like, they have hidden information, like, you know, you fucking code the fucking way the lines are written in the catalog for a particular product. Yeah. And then it's like, oh, that's actually code for "we strike at dawn" and that kind of shit.
But at the same time,
he doesn't fucking know it.
It does feel like there's no organized coup yet. It's just people thinking that maybe we need to do a coup soon.
Yeah, it's the thing. It's the setup for it, and it's people putting out feelers. Like, what's her name with the blue hair?
Mauve.
Mauve is, I still consider the possibility that she's not putting out feelers to see if there is a coup. She's putting out feelers to see if people know about the coup that she's planning.
Yes.
And it's kind of like the thing I was like, oh, let's just have a look around. You know, everyone's kind of got their finger on the trigger, essentially, yeah.
Yeah, and it almost feels like, is the king planning his own coup?
That's another thing. Yeah. Yep.
In order to prevent his wastrel heir taking over.
Yeah. Yeah. Is he not happy with the way things will be going?
Yeah.
Because he is 100 now.
Yes. And so we get a load of flashbacks as well to this train accident, which was 13 years ago.
I feel like that's right.
Yeah.
It's around 13.
And yeah. But then right at the end, we learn that the prince hasn't left. Like, the royals don't like to, except for the king, don't like to leave this part of the country.
Yeah, I've forgotten the name of the royal part of the country.
Yeah, an accident 33 years ago. And isn't Gene 33 years old?
Yeah, but the accident seems to be like, there seem to be a time difference between the accident.
Yeah, the train accident is one. Yeah, because you hear
Gene's parents dying.
Yes.
But perhaps we're just getting skewed numbers there, you know?
Oh, well, I'm thinking there's a second incident, which is where Gene's parents got disconnected from the royal family.
Oh, I see.
Yes.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I think you've gone through all this episode saying it's the 13-year-ago train accident. Groschler sorted it out. There's been no accidents in 2 years through the National Transport Company.
And more so that it's entirely possible that he was involved in the accident. He was trying to end that side of the royal line. Yeah.
And then
that seems to be the suggestion. Yeah.
Well, he probably wasn't because he's too young.
Not him specifically, but he was involved in that.
But no, but
in that government.
Because you kind of get the explanation of why he is so closeted and he is so weird. It's because he's never been out the country because of that suggestion. Like, he's too dangerous for the children and women of the royals to leave the country.
Yeah.
After this accident in 33
mess up
years
with
ago.
The line. Yeah.
We don't have. Yeah. So we don't. Yeah. So we're like, oh, what was that? That's a new thing we've not heard of. We've heard about this other accident, but this is a thing which is like, oh, and isn't Gene 33 years old or thereabouts?
Well, here's the other thing, right? And again, conspiracy theory as fuck. But that the king would secretly plan his family elsewhere. So if he didn't like how shit was going, he could make them the new heirs. It's entirely possible Gene's existence, I guess you'd call it, or existence as a potential heir, is falsified because he's like, they basically say your man's been following him since he was young. So it's like, maybe they're going like, oh, we're making him the really obvious heir to the king to anyone who fucking looks into it. And we've actually kept someone else fucking elsewhere. Oh, do you get what I mean?
Yeah. And Gene also, Gene tells Groschler that, you probably don't want to believe everything that Crow is writing in the reports you sent.
He's full of shit. That's basically his thing.
Yeah. So there's also a big thing of he wanted to put his portrait in the portrait gallery. And there's a portrait apparently that the king is always looking at.
And also, he's not allowed, or at least he only lets the prince into the portrait gallery.
Does,
he won't let anyone else in, because I'm guessing anyone with fucking two brain cells to rub together would be able to put fucking shit together if they could just see the fucking royal line.
And also, Maggie's like, you should really come and eat some of this bread, because it will really change your view of the world.
And I'm, yeah, again, I'm thinking, is that him trying to get him out of the palace?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I don't think that is the case.
But it's not potentially, yeah.
It seems with Maggie that there's like a genuine, there's a genuine like of Schwan there. And also,
but the thing is, Maggie was pushed into doing that by someone else.
That's true.
So, someone else trying to get the prince out of the palace.
There's the temptation of sandwich bread.
yeah, just tempt the prince out with fucking delicious toast.
But we also get things like Rael going on to, going to hit on Lotta, and then Lotta thinking the presents for Jean.
Yeah,
which is nice comedy.
And also him freaking out about the your man with the mustache and ridiculous hat.
Yes.
Going like, ooh, he's an even bigger threat than the brother.
He's just assuming that everybody's in love with Lotta the same way he is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I suspect the person who is in love with Lotta is Nino.
Yeah. Because yeah.
There's kind of it feels a bit like that.
Mm.
They're sort of the way they behave around each other, I think, is.
Yeah, Nino seems to be quite comfortable around
her.
Yes.
And she's comfortable around him.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, so Mo thinks Jean's useless because he's not bringing her any information. So on the next trip he goes to the Southern Island.
Yeah, is that supposed to be like Hawaii or something?
Something like that. Sure. I think probably a bit of Italy in there as well.
Definitely with the amount of like, what the guy who was in charge was like 90 something,
91 years old. Yeah,
and so, it's like, oh yeah, we all are very youthful around here, and they're all like,
it's all the
full
diet. Yes,
it's all that olive oil. I mean,
so he gets them drunk and gets them to give him some tiny tidbits of information.
He tries to run. His friend's game on him.
Yes, because he notices them trying to feel him out.
Asking him kind of probing questions that you could get a part of an answer out of.
Yes.
And then backing down as soon as they felt like, ooh, pushed a little fair on that one, that kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah, and Grocer confronts Lilium about Lilium telling Jean that Crow was spying on him, and Lilium's like, well, that's just to try and make you tell us what on earth you're doing so we can all agree, all have a vote and a debate about what's happening with this coup.
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting that, like we said before, it's like, did he tell Jean that in order to kind of try and force someone else's hand? And that seems to be the case,
yes,
according to Grossler, yeah.
Yeah, I get still no sign of a clear coup, and like I said, I'm not even sure there necessarily is one. There's just maybe the feeling that it's been 100 years, we'd do another coup.
Yeah, and people feeling that maybe we should do a coup. And see, like I said, no one, even Mover or anything like that, they mightn't be specifically planning one, but they might see if they should do one.
Yes.
Do people want a coup is maybe what they're looking into. Yeah, it's entirely possible there isn't a coup plan. But
no, except maybe, of course, ironically, by the royalty themselves.
Yeah.
On both sides, because Schwan wants his dad to step aside, so, or is it granddad? I can't remember exactly.
I think it's his granddad. I think he's the king's daughter's son.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To step aside and he can take the throne. And then there's a sense that Qualm is up to something in order to. And
he's trying to keep the things the way they are, so I'm not even sure if he wants the prince in power.
Exactly. The thing which is repeated throughout this episode is, I can't remember exactly how it's phrased, but it's the idea that Akka is best for the country. Having Akka the thing which keeps the country together, keeps it running, makes improvements, as you see from the Rock District. You get the exact evidence of the benefit of Akka through Groschula.
I think they specifically say there's been no accidents on land, sea, or air in like 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, 2 years.
Which is like, yeah, a considerable portion of time considering the real world. Well, I was like, not even a traffic accident? That's really good.
So, yeah, there's the sense that Akka is important and must be protected. And there's the sense that, obviously, Grossula and Mauve seem to be the ones who... That is definitely their motives.
But are there motives that they want Akka to actually be entirely in control since they do such a good job of protecting the place?
And we know the one person who is open about saying the things he wants, which is Schwan, is like, as soon as I'm king, I'm getting rid of Akka.
Yeah, and... Again, does your man want him to not go into power? Because he's happy with Akka basically running the fucking place and the king being that figurehead for the fancy folks and shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. that's what makes me think he's against that prince getting in power.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Mm. He really, it's just his delivery is like...
He's the only one who's upfront about shit, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he's the way he responds in the affirmative is like dripping with disdain.
Like, yeah, he doesn't even like the fact that people associate that the Akka kind of look and symbology and guards and everything like that with prosperity. He wants to fucking go back to, oh, we got to go back to the royal flag.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I like the way the Akka's uniforms are different in each country as well. I really did like the Southern Islands one, which is just basically a short sleeve shirt.
Yeah, well, you're not going to wear that big heavy jacket down there.
With the red dot on the sleeves. Yeah, they were really happy old men.
Yeah, yeah. And again, even though it's like such a nice fucking place, you still got in the feel for it in the episode that people aren't entirely happy and putting out feelers about it.
Yeah.
So it's kind of nice to see that, yeah.
Yeah, it's almost like not necessarily that they're not entirely happy, it's just the sense that they could be happier.
That, yeah, yeah, yeah. It's in business. Business is good. It could be better. And everyone kind of like wondering.
We need chipmunks coming to have a word with them.
Yeah, yeah. Well, maybe he'd start the coup, though. Make your own happiness, you know?
Are you going to bully me? Yeah, this is a good show. There's another good show we're not even watching, Little Witch Academia.
Yeah.
Soon, hopefully. I assume it's only 13 episodes. We're not going to have to wait for 6 months for it to show up on Netflix.
Oh, my God.
Hope not.
Yeah, yeah.
Righty ho, I think that's everything covered this week. Mm? Be back next week. Hang on, let me do the outro properly.
Sure.
Come on, yes, right. Here we go. That ends this week's episode of Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime. Before we say goodbye, let's find out what's coming up on this week's Secret of the Sailor Madness and Dynamite in the Brain. What you got coming up on Secret of the Sailor Madness, Dwayne?
I feel like we do still have the My Love Story showing up. And I've kind of forgotten what else we have. There's a few more things in the pipeline.
Okay, I can tell you that coming up on Dynamite in the Brain this week is Broly, the legendary Super Saiyan. We'll be talking about that and the Broly Mania and also Dragon Ball Super. We'll probably be talking about that as well. How could we not?
Well, yeah.
If we're talking about Dragon Ball, eventually the topic will turn to Dragon Ball Super.
I'm kind of curious about that because that's Broly's kind of peak Dragon Ball Z, isn't it?
It is, yes.
So I'm wondering how that's going to contrast from rewatching while in the middle of watching Super, yeah.
Oh, yeah, for me, this is the very first time I've seen a Dragon Ball Z movie.
Oh, okay.
This is the very first one I've seen, and I've never seen Dragon Ball Z. I mean, I've seen Kai, but I've not seen Z.
Yeah, okay.
So, yes, you'll find out, if you listen to the podcast, you'll find out what I thought about it and what people who had seen it before thought about it.
Hmm.
Coming back to it. Some people still have their rose-tinted glasses on. Some people don't. But we'll be back here next week for Let's Go. Goodbye.
Bye.